Finding your identity on the shaky ground of the world's ideas versus finding your identity on the solid foundation of Christ. Let's talk about it. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome back to this latest episode of the Courageous Conversations podcast here at Briarcrest Christian School. I'm once again joined by my friend and colleague, Jonathan Bernhardt. And today, John, we get to talk about identity. So it should be a very fun conversation. Hey, how you doing? Are you good?
I'm doing great.
Hey, you know, one thing for our dozens of YouTube video viewers, they might be noticing that we're in a different environment here in the studio. Dun, dun, dun. And so we have these really cool plants behind us that are not real. So we don't have to water them.
Although we
were joking how funny it would be to get a TA to tell the TA that the trees are real. We need you to water them.
Yep.
But anyway, yeah. So we are here in the studio, and on the other side of those cameras, what do you see on the other side of those cameras? Does it look neat? Nice.
It looks like an office that has been truncated into a very, very small corner of what used to be a bigger office.
I really appreciate the fact you didn't call it messy, because it is my office and it is quite messy.
It could use some reorganizing.
But look over there. They can't see this, but do you see the LP of the Top Gun Maverick soundtrack signed by my third period apologetics class last year? I mean, that is one of the most thoughtful gifts I've ever received. I almost cried a little bit. And they
That's fair.
The problem is, because they signed the wrapping, I can either listen to it or preserve their signatures. I cannot do both. So,
can't you take the wrapping off and then just preserve the wrapping separately?
I could, but then that just looks weird. Like, it's not like on a thing. Anyway, I don't think anybody is listening to this to hear about my office decor. But we are, in fact, excited to have everyone here. Now, before we get into today's episode, we would love for you to like and subscribe this podcast on whatever platform you are consuming it on, whether it be Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or YouTube. We'd also love for you to, in the comments section, let us know what you want us to talk about, because we are a source of all sorts
open
of
books. Yeah,
we're useless ready. Information or useful information. Hopefully, occasionally we're useful, but we would love to know what you guys are thinking about, what y'all would love for us to possibly tackle. So, anyway, all right. So, here's what I thought would be a great way to start out today. I would love for you to share that story I've heard you share multiple times, involving identities and the way that was framed up in higher education. I know you found yourself in an educational environment, and you went through the identities piece and all of that. So tell that story, and then we'll talk about why that's important for us framing up the conversation today.
Yeah, so about 10 years ago, so again, before a lot of kind of identity politics and things really entered into the mainstream culture and media, I was at we'll call it a professional development, right, at a big university. And while we were there, one of their icebreakers was to list about five or six different parts of your identity that kind of make you up. Like, what are the six or five biggest pieces of you, if you will? And so, we did it individually, everyone wrote it down, and then we got into small, like, little cohorts, and we went through every single one for every single person and kind of talked about why we chose to identify kind of of these things or kind of how that was viewed. And what was interesting was different people, whether it be from different geographical locations or from different, again, like demographical backgrounds, different religious perspectives and backgrounds, all had very different things, I'll say, for half of them, but actually similar things for the other ones, being, again, a father or a sibling, sure. People, because since it was an educational professional development, teachers was a big one. Pretty much everyone on there had teacher as one of their identities. And so going through it, being a Christian was one of my identities, and it did spark some conversations there. But what I thought was interesting is how everyone had one of those six was like their main identity.
Yeah.
Right. For me, being a Christian was my main identity. Again, being a teacher, a sibling, a son, whatever, a friend, these things were all different. An American, even. And I know we joked about, I had said that a Southerner was one of the identities, because while I'm an American, the South is different, right? I grew up not in the South for my younger days, but coming down here, I've adapted to Southern culture for a big part, and it's different, right? If you're coming from anywhere else in the United States, you pretty much need a passport to come here because it is wildly different. I don't know if I've ever told you this story, but my first week here, I got like sent to the principal's office 3 times because I just didn't understand cultural norms here. Like from the North, if someone says something you don't hear them, it's okay to just say what or huh? Well, here, if a teacher says something you don't hear them, you got to say, excuse me, right? Like it was just different, or ma'am. We don't do ma'ams in the North. Like you call parents by their first names, Mr. and then first name.
Yeah.
So like I got, again, just cultural things I just was unaware of when I came down here. So I said, I identify as a Southerner too, because that's a big part of our culture now. And so I remember having those conversations with people and not realizing that was kind of the beginning of what we're starting to see today, except now it's people are, I feel like, one or done. It's all or nothing. Whatever that main part of their identity is 110% all in everything, and it defines every other element of what they are. And the problem is, like we've talked about before, it's not Jesus. It's not Christianity, right? Their identity, their purpose isn't being seen through that lens, and so you just get more fracturing, more division across, I'd say, America.
Well, and you got, so I love that you framed it up that way too, because you're talking about like your Jesus being the core of your identity that frames up every other element of your identity. So you being a father, you being a son, you being a husband, you being an education, like all the things you do are framed up by Christ. So if that's the case, that's the core of your identity. But I'm assuming as you were participating in this exercise, other people were finding these other identities that framed up the rest of them. And like you said, the problem is that it's not Jesus. Okay. So in light of that, just let me ask you this question, because I think it might be helpful. What were some of the conversations around your Christianity, and what were some of the things that maybe they were offering as alternative identity markers to find their anchor? So like for you, for me, our anchor is in Christ, and we'll talk about that. And I got a verse right here, Galatians 2:20, that I think is really helpful and you know, helping us see what that means. But like, you know, if it's not Christianity, if it's not Christ, what is the identity marker that people were using?
Yeah, well, a lot of people, their main identity marker was actually their either like political affiliation, their geographic kind of like location, you know, whether it be like a, you know, New Yorker, a Californian, things like that, you know, Texan, you know, one of those big things. So we had a lot of that. Very rarely people had their, because again, this was 10 years ago too, their sexual orientation was a big part of their identity for a lot of the people there. But I'd say overall politics seemed to be like one of the major things. And I'm going to be honest, I didn't even think of that when I was thinking of my main components. Sure. But I'd say that, and parenting, a lot of the people who are parents, I mean, like, I feel like father and mother was a really, really big one for them.
But even, okay, so even as you're talking, like, I'm thinking through my identity markers of being a Christ follower who is trying to love his wife well and love his kids well and do all the things. Politics didn't even remotely enter into my, and I knew where the story was going, and it still didn't even like, I'm not, now that doesn't mean I don't have thoughts on politics. Right. I mean, you teach history, right? And I do all sorts of crazy worldview stuff all the time, which politics often intersects with that.
Yep.
In fact, kind of a closet political junkie. I love following whatever the crazy stuff is, but like the, at the same time, that's not because, so if politics quote doesn't go my way, I still have the hope of Christ, but if politics is your God and it doesn't go your way, you're literally having an existential crisis. Like your eschatology, which is the big fancy word for like end times theology, we're not progressing the way we're supposed to, and therefore all hope is lost. So anyway.
And parties, by the way, like start and die. I mean, like we've had political parties in the United States that have literally fizzled out, whether it be, you know, Federalists, you look at the Whigs, right? Like we've had parties not, I mean, so there's no even promise that the current political parties and agendas will even stand the test of time. So that's kind of a weird thing to put like an all in, you know, faith base into one of these things, because they're not guaranteed.
Sure. And I do think like one of the ways to love your neighbor is to participate in politics, because that you're able to affect good change and help your neighbor and whatever that looks like. But that's not obviously the sum total of what the Christian walk looks like.
Right.
It's a piece of it, and oftentimes a smaller piece of it, because we're still living lives. We've got young kids. We're trying to figure that whole thing out. We got wives. We're trying to figure that whole thing out. But looking in hindsight, so we're on this Courageous Conversations podcast, and it's all about like the conversations necessary to share Christ in 2025, right? So we're trying to figure this out. Did you see the kind of the foundation for what has become the, you mentioned it, identity politics. And I think the best way to quickly sum it up is to take one identity, person with said identity, and pit it against another person with its kind of like other ideas. So like the, it could be a different, so male versus female would be the kind of the easiest biological example. So you're, instead of like male and female complementing each other, it's like female versus male, male versus female. Did you see the foundations of that?
Yeah, it felt a little, I'll call it otherism, where it's kind of like an us-them situation where I think it was really meant to just kind of learn about people, because I think it is a quick way in terms of icebreaker to figure out about people. Like, oh, I didn't know you were a parent, or, oh, I didn't know you were from the state. I mean, it has its merits to say just as like an easy icebreaker, but I do think you're right. I think what that then led to is as people identified as these certain things, it was a, oh, well, I'm this and you're not. Mm-hmm. Kind of reminds me of that old Dr. Seuss with like the, what is it? The Sneetches or whatever. They had the stars. Some of them had the stars. Yeah. Some of them didn't have the stars. Yeah. And it was like this weird us that, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
So it kind of reminded me of that, where all of a sudden they're starting to build in a like, oh, but you identified as these things and we didn't. And all of a sudden it almost catalyst the fracturing, the division, the us them mentality, because it was like, oh, well, I'll just kind of create this clique of other people who also identified like me, and you can create this clique of other people identified as you. And it goes back to what we've talked about on this podcast before, of having those like kind of intentional friendships of people who are different than you to help bridge those gaps and really experience tolerance and have productive conversations by creating those divisions and isolating people across these different cliques, rather than having really, I say, helpful discourse between those groups of differing views. It now isolates people into what we are now seeing, thanks to social media especially, those echo chambers.
Yeah.
If you only hang out with people like you, you're only going to hear those views. You're never going to get any other experience except that.
Yep. No, I completely agree. And so I think then looking at that, if we fast forward 10 years to where we are now, what you then see is like this identity marker versus this identity marker. And I think the thing that you hit on too is like Christian Southerner is what you basically, you walked into this environment in higher education and you said, I'm a Southern Christian. And that comes with its connotations, right?
Yes,
but
it did.
Yeah, but they immediately looked at you as the other, right? They immediately looked at you and were like, hey, this is this guy has these views. Mm-hmm. Instead of like, that creating curiosity, do you think that might have begun to create some division amongst the group?
I think with some pockets of people who particularly held a very, how do I phrase this? Had a very negative view on Christianity. I think that was a really big non-starter for them. And I don't think there was conversations that were willing to kind of come out of that. Luckily, in a history cohort that I was in, people are used to talking about, you know, these types of issues. And so I actually think that bubble was a lot more helpful in having those conversations. And there were other people there who identified as Christians and whatnot. So like that did help as well. But I'd say for the most part, it did kind of allow for my ability to even just socialize and talk to people and work with people on a professional level. And there were just people who just were not necessarily willing to always, you know, make that extra effort to have those conversations.
Well, and so then if we're fast forward in 10 years, what we see now, and I think this is everywhere. I think this is well documented if you're just willing to look and see all the material that's out there. You can go and look at elementary classrooms and see work assignments that have been assigned. And this is not just like one random elementary school in one random state. This is something that is all over the place. You've got second graders being asked about, what are your identity markers? And so in and of itself, if you hear that as a parent, you're like, well, I guess that's not necessarily bad. You're learning about differences in people and all of that. But then what happens is you then have these assignments being assigned and they say, pick two of your identity markers that are oppressive and two of your identity markers that are oppressed and write a paragraph about each one. I'm literally quoting from something I saw very recently from an elementary school, just something I saw on the internet. And these are being well documented that this idea has happened. And so when it comes to identity formation and how people identify and even certain incentive structures to identify certain ways, let's use this for instance. If one, based on this kind of new matrix that we're living in right now, that the culture has been pushing, if I identify as someone who is cisgender, so that means I'm not transgender, that means my within this framework, because obviously the biblical worldview doesn't describe based on this framework, like what they say is that your biological sex matches your gender identity. Well, actually, according to this framework, you're an oppressor. but you know how you can jump out of that? Well, you just identify as transgender. And the moment you identify as transgender, you're no longer an oppressor, but you are oppressed. And you hear these stories of people who actually detransition from the transgender movement. And what they're saying is, I transitioned initially because I wanted to be anything else other than like a boring, straight, cisgender person. And because this is happening, these identity markers, and some of these things are true, like, you know, the fact that you're a husband and a father and all that.
Right.
But then some of these things are, I would argue this whole transgender idea is deeply spiritual, like in its belief system and nature, and it's wrong. It's not biblical, but it's created, and that gives us yet another category for people to jump into that creates this dynamic where you have these two identity markers being pit against each other.
Well, and who wants to be labeled an oppressor? Is you know, part of that idea. And it's like, what, you've literally just were born and born this way, and then that just makes you an oppressor?
Yeah. And that's, well, and we can, there's so many podcasts we can do on this, but this is just basically Marxism made over again. So we're taking the Bolsheviks and the proletariat, and we're just relabeling.
Bourgeois, I believe.
What did I say?
The Bolshevik was the revolution. Sorry, history guy here. I can't let that one fly.
This is why it's great to have a history guy on your podcast. So he can correct all of my errors. But no, seriously, like that's what's taking place is you've got, you know, the replacement of the bourgeois and the proletariat.
Yeah.
And you're replacing that with cisgender and transgender. And you're not outright telling people that. Mm-hmm. You're just doing it. You're just teaching through that lens. And then people are coming home and they're being all confused by this. Right. And they're thinking their identity markers.
Well, and you can be both an oppressor and be oppressed simultaneously, depending on where you are. And I know that one chart you've shown me where and it's like, well, then how can you be both at the same time and to whom, and then how does that work? And then who gets to be unoppressed, or how do we decide that? There just becomes this massive kind of hole of like, okay, what now? Right. Like you said, where's the hope? And like, where do we move forward from this? And more importantly, on whose authority, I think, is the big thing we always talk about. Like, who then gets to be the one to decide? Cause we've seen how that worked out in some other, you know, from Stalin to some other, you know, very unpleasant leaders who kind of be the ones dictating that to people.
Mao Zedong, from as best I understand, because I've been reading about him a little bit, he actually created at some point in his rule, whether it be the first time or the second time, he created 10 different identity markers, 5 of which were oppressive and 5 of which were oppressors, and was able to just pit his entire country against itself in order to take over. So and by whose authority? Well, Mao's.
Mao's.
Like, right. So that's where this goes. But then if you think about it, like if this is what is being subtly taught and caught in both classrooms and on social media, you have a version of identity that might be full of some half-truths, like you are a father and you are a husband. But because you are those things, you're creating an oppressive family structure that needs to be overturned. Because you are, your kids are, you know, unfairly benefiting from the fact that you are their father and you love them or something like that. That's,
right.
And that's not made up. Like, that's really what is being taught in these things. And once again, we don't have time to go into all the details. Maybe in a future podcast we will. But understanding that as you're sharing Christ with somebody, and I think this is a key point, that on that chart that you referenced, and one day we'll get into that too, on that chart, Christian is an oppressor. So if you've imbibed, believed the system, when you tell somebody that you're a Christian, they're going to look at you and think you are just an evil oppressor. Like you're what's wrong with the world. You're formulating systems and structures that are keeping people oppressed. And so while proximity is always good to diffuse those notions, right? Like if you have a relationship with somebody and their preconceived notion of you is that you're an oppressor, and then you love them well with the love of Christ, they're like, well, okay, maybe I'm wrong. And then maybe they meet Jesus. Like, that's the goal, right? But I think for us as parents, us as educators, people who are called to share the gospel, we have this opportunity to share Christ and the identity found in him and how that frames everything up in a totally different way than what we just discussed. So I'm gonna read this verse, and I think it's really helpful. And then we can talk about it and just identity formation in Christ. But Paul says this. He says in Galatians 2:20, I've been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. And the life I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. And so this verse right here, Paul is talking about the fact that his identity is hidden in Christ. And so as you're hearing that, you know, and we talk a lot about just identity and identity in Christ, what are a couple of the things that come to mind as far as like the joy of having your identity hidden in Christ versus the oppressor oppressed matrix that you then use to kind of get some sort of like intersectional clout against somebody else. So what are just some of the things that come to mind when you,
well, a couple of things while you were talking that I just had a pop up window in my brain. The idea that, I mean, Jesus himself was an oppressed Jew who was killed at the hands of a, you know, oppressive government too. So I always think it's funny that Christians then get lumped into the oppressor category when in their foundational sense, they were very much oppressed, right? Yes. Hunted down, killed by the Romans. So I always think that dynamic is funny just historically.
For sure.
Can't take the history guy right out of the podcast. it's just got to be there. But no, I think of it now when, you know, you think of, again, and I'll say Christian, when we say Christian, we mean people who have truly had this conversion or truly have the salvific experience, not people who just say that, go through the motions. And I think that's important because so often our people would probably call nominal Christians, right? They call themselves that, but there's not really that life that follows it. But for those who have had that truly salvific experience, being a Christian is humbling, right? Which I feel like makes you very much not an oppressor, because the idea is it's like, it's not me, it's God. Like, my authority isn't me. It comes directly from God. And so it takes some of the pressure off. I mean, again, there should be no, you know, raw judgment. Hey, we're all sinners. Like, we're all, you know, in the same boat here. Like, we all make mistakes. Like, you know, forgiveness and again, love from a biblical way of defining that word, not necessarily a 21st century way of defining that word. But like, that I think is so much different than the picture that gets painted by mass culture, who either has that very negative experience with people who identify as Christians or just get sucked into that black hole of social media echo chambers that just says like Christian bad.
Yes.
And then that's just what they run with. And you know, and again, I think one of the greatest compliments, you know, a Christian could have is to have someone who is one of those like very anti Christianity, you know, kind of people. And you just build community with them and they can see like, oh, is this what you meant by, you know, loving well or being kind or investing your, you're like, I think once people have that experience with Christians and it's that actual hands-on, real-life, personal experience, I mean, I think that's one of the greatest testimonies we can, as believers, show to people.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think as you're showing them that, they're seeing Christ. Like, mm-hmm. they're seeing what it means to find their identity in Christ. And to that, I would add, if you go up to Galatians 2:17, it says, "But if in our endeavor to be justified in Christ, we too are found to be sinners." And what he means by that is like having a different identity. He's like, these people who are outside of Christ are labeling me based on their worldview, a sinner, or based on their worldview, an oppressor. So if you know, in our endeavor to be justified in Christ, in other words, if I call myself a Christian, the non-Christian person who's bought into all this cultural stuff calls me an oppressor. Look at what he says to that. "Is Christ then a servant of sin? Certainly not." And then he says, "For if I rebuild what I tore down, I prove myself to be a transgressor." In other words, if I leave behind my biblical worldview and the gospel and I begin to subscribe to this worldview, I'm only putting myself under condemnation. Mm-hmm. That's what's so sad about the fact that very real image bearers of God are buying into these ideas is not that, you know, they're just wrong, because they are. That's sad enough. But the fact that they then lead them to a condemnation. And I oftentimes joke, if you're buying into these ideas, but you're an American, well, according to this chart, you are an American oppressor. So you have to like renounce your citizenship to get rid of that. I mean, it's just, where does it stop?
And I want to talk too about just the pressure of all that, like the social pressure, cultural pressure, the fact that you are literally performing for an audience of what? Online trolls or cultural markers or people who are loud on what used to be Twitter, and I don't know what they all are now, but you know, that's this idea that it's like, is that what the performance is about? Like, they're still performing and serving something or someone. It's just not God.
Yep. And that's it. So like, instead, and that's what gets back to the beauty of being in Christ. Like, when I fail, which I will, I'm still loved by Christ perfectly, because that's what he literally said on the cross. It is finished, right? I know you and I've talked about, like, if I was to get a tattoo, I would get a tattoo right here on my wrist, and it would be right where the nail marks pierce Jesus's wrist. And it would say tetelestai, which in Greek is the Greek word that we translate, it is finished. And it's actually an accounting term, and it's the debt has been paid in full. And I would love to see that on my wrist, because it would be a reminder that Christ has paid my debt in full. So even when I fail, if my identity, that's what Paul's saying, if I'm hidden in Christ, like, I don't have to, it'll be okay. Like, he paid for it. Now, that's not permission to sin. Like, that's Romans 6. Like, don't keep sinning because of grace. But that's the beauty of what we have in Christ. And that's the beauty, or rather, that is so telling of what is lacking in this new mm-hmm. identity mumbo jumbo thing. Because eventually that chart finds you. And even Christians that have bought into this in part, it's all fun and games until they start yelling at you and telling you you're a Christian oppressor.
Right.
And then you have to renounce your Christianity in order to get on the right side of all these things. It's really sad.
What will they add to that list? You know, like the more and more things as time goes on in order to get people to kind of buy in or to be absorbed by that mass culture, it's not an exhaustive list.
Yeah.
I mean, it is an ever organic changing amoeba that could eventually, like, you could switch, or like, oh, I'm going to go be here. So I'm not an oppressor. I'm an oppressed. Well, then in 10 years, maybe that is going to be an oppressor group and you got to switch back. You know, like it's so evolving.
That's what, this will kind of be the one of the last things I'll interject into this and then we'll wrap it up. But I noticed that last year with the conflict in the Middle East involving Israel, and all of a sudden you had this kind of worldview shift in the way that it viewed Israeli identity. And it was so crazy how quickly that happened because you're watching and you're going, what in the world? And then you realize it's this, and it's the oppressor versus oppressed dynamic playing itself out in this conflict, this heartbreaking conflict in the Middle East,
right.
and somehow being able to say that a terrorist group is not a terrorist group because of the oppressor-oppressed dynamic, and they're just an oppressed group. They're not a terrorist group. And so you see it, and you're just like, what in the world is going on? Well, it's this worldview that doesn't allow for you to see things clearly. All right, so we are, this, I think this would be a great way to wrap this up. We're raising kids. You've got a couple. I've got a couple. I'm watching my kids grow up. As they grow up, they're forming their identities, not necessarily in this oppressor-oppressed dynamic,
right.
but just, I'm good at this sport, or
right.
I'm super smart, or I'm social, or whatever it is. What would you say for us as parents about helping our kids see the beauty of the having their identity in Christ? Like, what do we need to be thinking through as parents? Like, what can I be thinking through with, you know, having a middle schooler at home?
Oof.
Yeah, you'll get there too. So having this middle schooler at home and like knowing that she's good at certain things and she's going to want to build her identity on that, what are maybe parting words on just what we need to be doing as parents?
Yeah, well, I think when it comes to that, it's very foundational. Of course, your identity is in Christ, and that's not only just the fallback, that is, right? I mean, that is the constant, the consistent, because again, you're good at sports. Well, you could tear an ACL and bam, right? That part of your identity is going to be massively different, right?
Or just get old.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about the getting old thing. This morning I woke up and it was cold because my knee hurt. You know, one of those things like, yep, I'm going to need a jacket today. But yeah, I mean, but as those things, right, change, they'll fade away. But it's that consistent in Christ, and it's not performance based.
Yeah.
Right. The idea is that you may be good at sports, but guess what? You're going to get to a level of sports where you're not going to be the best, and you're going to have to work super hard, and there are going to be people better than you. And then all of a sudden, are you a failure? Have you literally, like, your purpose in life has just collapsed around you? Now you're directionless and sad and purposeless and hopeless and right? You don't want that. So making sure that our kids always know that their identity and foundation is in Christ first, and all those other things, I mean, they're, I don't say they're silly, because I mean, they can be very helpful and productive, but they don't matter. They're not eternal things. I think that's what we're getting at. They're not eternal things. And so those aspects of their identity, while again, they probably feel immensely important, especially in those middle school days, the most important identity is that identity in Christ. And again, those other things will change. Again, hopefully my sons one day become fathers as well, right? Like, that would be great. That will be a change
grandpa
in their identity.
Grandpa John.
I know, right? Feels weird, although I do feel like a grandpa sometimes.
Well, with the knee
old,
and
right?
the cold weather and all that, yeah.
See that? But no, I think that's it, is really making sure that that's the foundation, because no matter what life throws at them, if they have that to fall back on, they will always land on solid ground. And I think about to my own experience, whether, again, I wasn't super good at sports or really much anything else, but like, I think about, like, I was always a pretty healthy person, and I've told the story before, but when I went to Peru and taught there for a bit, I got really sick. I mean, I was in and out of hospitals for months, if not over a year. And it was bad. They thought I was going to die for a bit. And so it's one of those things where, like, even then, I still knew that my feet would land on solid ground.
Sure.
And I knew that, no matter what happened, God's got me.
Yeah.
And it was very reassuring.
Well, and so for me, this will be the last thing I say, and then we'll wrap this up. But I was never good at sports. So I never had the temptation to find my identity in something that I was terrible at. No coordination. Normally I'm afraid of the ball. Like, there's a whole story of me ducking when someone passed me the basketball and my parents in the front row laughing at me. So it was playing.
See that.
Yeah, it was rec, like 10th grade. like church league basketball.
I thought you were going to say like third grade.
No. It was 10th grade. No, it was not third. It was 10th. I'm telling you, it's worse than you think. It is worse than you think.
That's good.
So, but God actually, that was a gift in some ways because I've never been tempted to find my identity in that. However, it's so easy for me to find my identity in my performance here or the way I love my kids or whatever. Not that those are bad things. Like I want to come to work and do a good job. Yeah. I want to love my kids well. But if something goes sideways, if I don't do something perfectly, which is going to happen frequently, I'm just like, oh no, who am I? But the fact that I'm hidden in Christ, that Christ sees all the brokenness and loves me anyway, like I can't get over that. It changes. Like you said, there's so much freedom.
Yeah.
And I know that's what we both want for anybody and everybody we encounter. Yeah. And that's the reason we want to have these courageous conversations. It was somebody who might even think you're a Christian oppressor.
Yeah. Well, and being a parent too has helped tremendously. Cause I think of my own kids, like if my kids screw up, man, I still love them. Right. You know what I mean? Like it's one of those things, like I do not expect my kids to be perfect. God doesn't expect me to be perfect. Right. Like he's going to love me through that. But do I still want my kids to continue to grow and become better? Of course. Right. And so I think being a parent, honestly, was one of those things where you're like, this makes a lot more sense.
Absolutely. Because you're sitting here, you're like, all right, I'm disciplining the kid because I love the kid, not because I'm actually like mad at the kid.
Right.
It kind of pains me to discipline them to some degree. But anyway, well, hey, John. This was fun.
It was always fun.
We're gonna do it again soon in the new studio with our lovely plants. Who knows? Maybe by the time this is said and done, we'll just have an entire thing of greenery back here. It'll just be fake plants
forest
all over the studio. Well, hey, if you made it this far, this is your reminder once again to like and subscribe. And we would love for you in the comment section once again to just leave something you'd love to hear us talk about. And so we thank you for joining us, and we look forward to seeing you next time here on the Courageous Conversations Podcast.